Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of March 17th. The U.S. government has repeatedly threatened to bring a case against the European Union, or EU, to the World Trade Organization, or WTO, regarding Europe's moratorium on imports of genetically modified food and drugs. 2 weeks ago, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Solek told the U.S. Senate Finance Committee that he was working to build an international coalition that would join the United States in filing for a challenge at the WTO against the four-year-old moratorium. Last week, Deputy U.S. Trade Representative Peter Allgeier met with Argentina's Vice Minister of Foreign Relations Martin Redrero to discuss the possibility of taking joint legal action against the EU for blocking imports of genetically modified food. The two countries share an interest in ensuring that world markets remain open to biotech food. 95% of Argentina's soybean exports and 25% of its cotton are genetically modified. The U.S. is the world's largest producer of biotech crops. About 70% of U.S. soybeans and one-third of U.S. corn are grown from genetically modified seeds. It's likely that Canada could join this coalition to fight Europe at the WTO, as Canada is the next largest producer of GM crops. U.S. farm and industry groups say the EU moratorium has cost them more than $300 million in annual exports. Zolik has called the European position on genetically modified or GM foods Luddite and immoral, and some members of the U.S. Senate Finance Committee have been pushing the Bush administration to initiate action at the WTO, particularly Iowa Republican Representative Charles Grassley and Montana a Democrat Max Baucus. Supporters of the move argue that the U.S. would be sure to win its case at the WTO, the trade organization's dispute resolution mechanism, which operates behind closed doors and has traditionally supported corporate interests in the face of legislative authority and environmental protections, has been repeatedly denounced by civil society groups as undemocratic and unaccountable. The EU moratorium, on the other hand, is driven by consumer concerns about the safety of GM food products, influenced by a string of food scares in Europe that included mad cow and foot and mouth disease. Europe's policy against importing GM foods also came out of years of advocacy and activism throughout the 1990s biotech boom, as citizens all over Europe took their garden tools to experimental farms, weeding or decontaminating plots of GM products. Crop squats occupied biotech farms for days and even weeks, turning them into demonstration organic farms and makeshift community centers. In 1998, the European Union passed regulations requiring all GM foods to be labeled and declaring a moratorium on approval for new biotech food and pharmaceutical products. The rules amounted to a de facto ban on imports of U.S. and Canadian biotech foods, chiefly because the U.S. and Canada refused to institute labeling policies for these products. Consumer polls on both sides of the Atlantic suggest that shoppers want GM foods labeled so they can avoid buying them. Thus, it's no wonder that the U.S. and Canadian governments, who have been staunch proponents of the biotech agriculture industry, are opposed to any labeling system that would alert customers to what they're buying. Elsa Morano, the U.S. Agriculture Department's Undersecretary for Food Safety, has described labeling as a, quote, trade barrier. While the U.S. and Canada have screwed themselves on exports by refusing to label their GM products, new EU legislation introduced last October to end Europe's moratorium on new GM products could backfire. The policy strengthens decade-old rules for testing and licensing GM crops and ingredients. Since January, the policy has attracted 18 applications for new biotech products to be allowed on the European market, including 10 proposals from Monsanto and 5 from Bayer. The first of these applications is expected to be approved or rejected in the fall, but while some EU countries herald the new process as a sign that the moratorium will end in a matter of months, other members are raising new objections. Though environmental and health risks are addressed by the new rules, Italy has been pushing for an examination of the potential economic risks of GM food imports, particularly for organic farmers. Italy is also asking the EU to pass regulations guarding against contamination caused by GM crops cross-pollinating from one field to another. Similar concerns are being put forth by France, Greece, Austria, Luxembourg, and Denmark, where Parliament in January demanded a study on whether the country could go completely GM-free. The outlook for biotech foods isn't much brighter in the rest of the world. India recently refused part of a $100 million shipment of GM-tainted soy and corn from the U.S. Brazil has impounded a shipment of American GM corn, demanding that it be returned or incinerated. In the Philippines, protesters uprooted GM crops and turned to the streets after the government caved in to U.S. pressure to accept the biotech products. And in Australia, the arrival of shipments of American GM crops has been greeted with colorful protest. Opposition is building up even within the U.S. and Canada. More than 75 American municipalities have passed resolutions calling for either the labeling of GM foods or a moratorium on planting such crops. Organic farmers across the continent have been organizing to fight for stricter regulation of biotech farms, arguing that GM crops will irreversibly contaminate their fields, making it impossible for them to certify. And last Tuesday, farmers in consumer groups in the U.S. filed a petition urging the government to halt development of a strain of genetically engineered wheat until it can be determined whether the grain would harm U.S. exports if put on the market. The petitioners argue that the wheat could lead to grain mix-ups in the field and in shipments that would make U.S. wheat unacceptable to foreign buyers. The product cited by the petition is a form of hard red spring wheat genetically engineered by Monsanto to withstand that company's Roundup herbicide. The petition comes on the heels of a research report released last week suggesting that the short-term impact on wheat prices and exports will be decidedly negative if Monsanto proceeds with its plan to introduce the Roundup Ready wheat. Quote, important market indicators point to a high risk that up to 30-50% of the foreign market for U.S. hard red spring wheat could be lost if the GM wheat is introduced in the U.S. now or in the next 2 to 6 years. The report adds that GM wheat will face more challenges in the marketplace than biotech corn or soybeans, both of which have already established markets, because the wheat crop is generally used for human food, while corn and soybeans are used more commonly in animal feed or as additives. The study goes on to argue that the introduction of biotech wheat will not only affect farmers and the seed industry, but could have a ripple effect that would hurt rural communities, local governments, and foreign food processors, retailers, and consumers. The study was financed by the Western Organization of Resource Councils, a coalition of community groups. In response, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced Saturday that it might impose strict requirements on Monsanto to ensure that the company does not sell its GM wheat until foreign markets accept it, and to closely monitor the company's production and distribution of the product. Michael Duane, a Monsanto wheat official, says the Roundup Ready wheat is years away from going to market, but the company is actually nearing the end of its regulatory approval process in the U.S. and Canada and could have the wheat available within the next 2 years. Monsanto field tested the wheat on 35 acres in the U.S. last spring. If approved, the Roundup Ready wheat would be the first genetically modified wheat in the world. Meanwhile, Monsanto is being investigated by the U.S. Department of Justice for possible antitrust practices in the herbicide industry. Monsanto's sales of Roundup, America's best-selling herbicide, have been under pressure since 2000 when the company lost U.S. patent protection for glyphosate, the herbicide's chief ingredient. This pressure on sales of Monsanto's staple product goes a long way towards explaining the company's push to patent GM plants that would increase reliance on its herbicide. But people don't seem to be buying the tactic. Monsanto's stock has fallen into the doldrums of late, sinking more than 15% Friday to close at $14.07 on the New York Stock Exchange. Monsanto's not alone in this biotech slump. As the industry stumbles from one embarrassing fiasco to another, biotech indexes have drooped to reflect the lack of consumer confidence in biotech products. Shares in biotech giant Aventis have sunk steadily since 2000, when traces of the company's Starlink corn, a GM product deemed unfit for human consumption by the Federal Department of Agriculture, appeared in hundreds of U.S. supermarket products. Millers and processors wound up spending $1 billion over 3 months to get rid of the Franken corn, yet traces of Starlink continue to show up in products from New Jersey to Japan. Scandals like that have shaken investor confidence across the biotech sector. The NASDAQ Biotech Index has fallen 40% in the past year. Overall, the U.S. biotech industry attracted $2.8 billion in venture capital last year, but that's down from $4.6 billion invested in 2000. With private investment in a slump, many U.S. biotech companies are turning toward the Homeland Security market as a means of reaping fresh profit. The connection between the biotech industry and bioweapons development is nothing new, of course. Monsanto sold Agent Orange to the U.S. military during the Vietnam War and has provided defoliants for the U.S. war on drugs in Colombia. But as the Bush administration pushes forward with its so-called war on terrorism, smaller biotech startups are joining the scramble for lucrative government defense contracts. Last October, the Bush administration shelled out $60 million for private companies conducting anthrax research. A more recent initiative calls for $6 billion to be spent by the U.S. Department of Defense on Project BioShield, a 10-year effort to develop vaccines for potential biological weapons. As private investment and venture capital dry up, U.S. government investment into bioweapons research is becoming an appealing alternative to private capital for many biotech firms. Companies like Anacor Pharmaceuticals, which uses genetic engineering to create new kinds of antibiotics, probably wouldn't even exist without funding from the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA. Last October, Anacor received more than $20 million from the U.S. Department of Defense to develop its anti-anthrax drugs. Vaxgen, a company that was focusing on developing an AIDS vaccine less than 2 years ago, has had its priorities reordered after winning a multi-million dollar U.S. government contract to develop an anthrax vaccine. And Cepheid, a biotech company that has developed processes for DNA analysis, has come to rely for its solvency on the U.S. government's purchase of a machine machine that detects anthrax contamination in the mail. The bioagent detection system developed by Cepheid in collaboration with weapons giant Northrop Grumman provides yet another example of how biotech firms have refocused their efforts to tap into the U.S. government's multi-billion dollar investment into bioweapons defense. A number of healthcare-oriented projects have been put on hold while Cepheid has worked with Northrop Grumman to sell anthrax detectors to the feds, and while millions of American taxpayer dollars have been spent to put these anthrax sniffers in U.S. post offices, the U.S. government hasn't given Cepheid a penny to develop DNA analyzers that could assist food safety inspectors in detecting genetically modified organisms in the food supply or help surgeons more safely remove tumors from cancer patients. In other news, you may recall from last week's program that a campaign is underway to boycott Procter & Gamble products as the company reaps more than $500 million in annual sales to the Pentagon. Well, it appears that some activists are deciding to go even further with an overall boycott of American goods from Disney to Walmart. Boycott Brand America is being spearheaded by Adbusters magazine. For more information, you can visit their website at www.adbusters.org. Other activists are encouraging a boycott not of American goods, but of the American dollar. The U.S. dollar's dominance of world trade, particularly in the oil market, is what enables the U.S. Treasury to sustain that nation's massive deficits, as the Treasury can print inflation-free money for global circulation. If the global demand for U.S. dollars falls, currency speculators will shift their assets to euros or yen, with the result that the U.S. economy would begin to falter. This argument's not without merit. Saddam Hussein's decision to dump the U.S. dollar for the euro more than 2 years ago has already paid off in a windfall of hundreds of millions of euros for Iraq's food for oil program. Iraq switched from the dollar to the euro in October 2000, on almost exactly the same day the euro reached its lowest ebb, buying at just 82 U.S. cents. But thanks in part to the U.S. president's threats of war and poor fiscal decision-making, the euro has increased steadily against the dollar under the George W. Bush administration and was worth $1.08 last week, up nearly one-third over the last 2 years. When Saddam made the switch to the euro, the UN issued a report arguing that the move could cost Iraq hundreds of millions of dollars. Analysts questioned Saddam's decision to buy into a plummeting currency and to move away from the dollar, which is used for most of the world's oil trade. But the appreciation of the euro, increased interest rates, and the ability to pay European suppliers in euros is now believed to have made hundreds of millions for the Iraqi Oil for Food program in the past 2 years. UN officials say that this benefit is helping to pay for humanitarian aid, war reparations, and the cost of weapons inspections. Whatever the tactic, it is becoming obvious that there is a growing movement internationally to disrupt the capitalist machinery that keeps the U.S. war effort moving forward. On that note, I'd like to close this week's Anti-Bees Knees report with the words of Amina Shirazi, a Toronto-based activist and member of Lawyers Against the War, who spoke at an International Women's Day rally earlier this month on the theme of standing up for peace and freedom. Over to you, Amina.
We need to withdraw our demand and we need to withdraw our financial support for products made by companies that profit from their association with the Pentagon, the global war machine and institution. We need to take our hard-earned cash out of the hands of those involved in war crimes and put it into the hands that will sustain the environment and lead to peace. The United States understands the importance of boycotts and economic sanctions as a strategy for defeating their adversaries. They've engaged in such campaigns for decades against the Soviet Union, Korea, China, Libya, Iran, and more recently Cuba and Iraq, just to name a few. And you know what? It works. If we really want to do everything we possibly can for our sisters internationally, then we have to think about how our money supports the very entities that not only oppress them, but profits from us in doing so. Let's start with severing economic contributions to companies that do business with the Pentagon, like Procter & Gamble, the makers of Tide and Crest toothpaste, ExxonMobil. In fact, let's try to eliminate oil from our shopping list altogether, because that's the real reason for the war. Let's try to find alternatives to Coca-Cola and General Electric and Federal Express and Honeywell and all their products. Let's continue to raise our voices against war and oppression. Let's continue to march for peace and freedom. And let's make wise decisions about who we give our money to. And as we work for peace and solidarity with our sisters around the world, thank you very much.
That was Amina Shirazi speaking at an International Women's Day rally in Toronto earlier this month. And that's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Auntie Bee's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.